Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects, and connecting with me now via Zoom. My co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good, man. Just hopped on a half timeout with Jared Dubin at 5. Back to be with you again at 7. Normally we don't spend 2 hours together in a day.
We really don't.
Welcome to all our live viewers, including Aaron Wood, who said, "Go Cavs from your biggest fan." I'm going to pretend that's about us and not about the Cavaliers. He is the biggest Chase Down Pod fan. And then the absolute unit in the chat just said no, but I'm not as much interested as much as if, is that a reference to the Markin and Mobley Allen lineup absolute unit, or are you just living your truth? Who's to say? Either way, if you just listen to the audio feed, you should come out and hang out with us on YouTube Live.
Absolutely. And this episode is all about the listeners. We will be getting to our listener mailbag. I want to let people know as well, for those that are like myself and listen to podcasts on Android and have Spotify, Spotify now has podcast ratings. So give us a 5-star review. You can send us a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com if you want to get into our Discord. So we really do appreciate all of the support. But before we get into the listener mailbag, let's talk about the least fun thing in the world. We're going to nip this right in the bud, right off the start. And my hope is that we will not have to talk about this anymore, because I don't plan on making this a part of our show. And obviously that's COVID. The Cavs had a game against the Atlanta Hawks postponed because they did not have enough players. I believe we are now up to 8 players in health and safety protocols. And I think, Carter, I don't know about you. I think it's helpful just at the top of the show for us to just kind of address how we're going to handle this. I know for myself, this pandemic has taken a mental toll. For those watching on YouTube, you can probably see my grays. And one of the things I've done is try to focus on what I can and can't control and just put all my energy towards those things I can control. And I'm not going to sit here and kind of second guess what the plan is with the NBA, the way that they're handling COVID and whatnot. I've got my own reservations and whatnot, but I know that these decisions are complicated. I have to do this in my own work life. And I think for the simplicity of this podcast, and so that we're not just sitting here pretending that we know what we're talking about when it comes to something that is fluid and is always changing, I think the best way for us to handle this is to basically treat it like an injury, even though it's far more complicated than that.
Yeah, I just, again, to the larger point, we ain't here to, we ain't gonna solve COVID on this podcast. Obviously, no. You know, we think folks should get vaxxed and boosted when they can and all that fun stuff. But, you know, I think from a content perspective, we ain't adding much to the discourse and beyond talking about the impact on the Cavaliers on the floor. And
yeah,
a lot of impact, Justin.
A lot of impact. If you're looking for more, there are plenty of places where you can listen to smart people that know what they're talking about. When we talk draft, we bring on draft experts because we don't know what we're talking about there. We sure as hell don't know what we're talking about when it comes to a pandemic.
Don't give away the Dr. Fauci review. He's coming on next week, guys.
Yeah, there you go. And it's also one of these situations where I feel like this comes up in sports where we all are on the same page. Like, nobody wants anybody to get sick. So when the answer is that kind of obvious, I feel like often what happens is everyone races to have the more extreme take to show how much they care. If you guys need to be convinced how much I care about this, like, I'm sorry, I don't know what to tell
let's
you.
Let's just move on.
I'm not going to spend a lot of. I'm not going to spend. Time.
No, we're spending no more time. Executive decision. We're going. Let's talk about Luke Kornet, starting center.
You know what? Now Jared Allen is the 4th tallest player on the team because Kornet is 7'2". How about that?
Is he? He's not 7 foot. Oh, 7 foot as well.
No, 7'2".
No, he is not
7'2". According to basketball.
I've watched this man play basketball in real life. He's 7'2". Because I watched him during his illustrious Chicago Bulls career at the United Center. That is actually stunning. Either way, Cavs are now down 8 players due to COVID. We can list them off. It is Isaac Okoro, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, Dylan Windler, Denzel Valentine. Who else? I'm running out. RJ
Pangos,
Nembhard.
Davis.
Pangos Lamar. Is not.
I thought Pangos was.
No, he is not. Lamar, oh, I thought he was too, and I was wrong. Lamar Stevens. Everybody. Yeah. The Cavs right now are looking for tomorrow's game against Boston. Are looking, assuming no more positive cases, to have Darius Garland, Ricky Rubio, Kevin Love, Lauri Markkanen, Taco Fall, Jetty Osmond, Dean Wade, Kevin Pangos, Justin Anderson, Luke Kornet. So it's going to be a tough one for these guys. They are about as shorthanded as it gets. I mean, the only way it could be worse is really to lose Darius, who is kind of, as we've mentioned, the straw that stirs the drink. But, it is going to be an uphill battle for these guys.
Yeah, and the reality is a lot of these teams are going to be going through this. I think the Cavs have benefited from some games where teams were shorthanded with COVID. The Milwaukee game stands out as an obvious one. And there's going to be games where they lose. Like, you look at the first, or I guess both matchups against the Celtics. Love and Lauri were out for those games. Jared Allen missed the second of those games. Evan Mobley got banged up in the second of those games as well. So this is, once again, we're playing Boston, severely shorthanded. They're missing some guys as well, just not to the same extent. But this is reality, right? Like, and it's going to take some nuance when you're evaluating the season, because there's going to be these weird stretches for every team where you have these replacement players. And I think the hope is you get through this worst wave where this new variant that seems to spread, whether you're vaccinated or not, you hope that with everybody being vaccinated, that it's going to prevent bad symptoms, anyone getting seriously sick. Hopefully they can test negative quicker if they are vaccinated and boosted. But the teams are going to have to go through this. And yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's reality right now.
And you know, if it is going to happen, it's, you know, I guess if it's got to happen all at once right around Christmas when you're not playing a ton of games, you know, it's
that's
about
a big
as
thing
advanced.
As well.
It's about as advantageous as it's going to be. I do just got to ask. I mean, I know we're going to crack open the mailbag here in just a minute. But, like, what do you do if you're JB Bickerstaff? Like, what? Who's your starting lineup? How much are you just playing the guys you added because you need them versus playing some of your end-of-rotation guys, even though they might not always be perfect fits?
Yeah, normally my suggestion would be to try to maintain as much continuity as possible, keep the bench unit together if you can and whatnot. Although I think some of that goes out the window when you are missing Allen, Mobley, Ed Davis, and so many guys at one position.
Continuity is a funny word to use. But I mean, to that end, though, I do expect to see Darius start. I expect to see Dean Wade start, and I expect to see Lauri start, because that's kind of been who's starting. And now it's a matter of who is your starter. I actually think this is a fascinating question, is who's your starter at the two? Because JB has been so hesitant to start Ricky and to break up the Jetty Ricky combo.
Yeah.
And to the point of starting Lamar Stevens, who is very much not a two against Milwaukee. But now his options, if he doesn't do that, are Kevin Pangos, Justin Anderson, and that's it.
Yeah, and I actually liked the decision to start Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade in that last game, because if you're going to have those guys out there, like, eating minutes, the likelihood that you're going to be able to carry one of those lineups is probably higher if it's with the other starters, if it's with Darius Garland, if it's with, I guess, Jared Allen when we had him and whatnot. Obviously, that goes out the window when you're missing 8 guys, and I'll be interested to see what they do there. But
who starts at the two?
I think you go Lamar again. I think
Lamar is not available, my friend.
Oh, that's right. Oh my goodness.
Whew. It is Ricky, Jetty, Pangos, or Anderson.
My God. I guess you have to go Ricky. I think you go Ricky and you sub him out first. I think, because they have started Ricky for some games alongside when other guys were out, but I think
they started him over. They started him while Darius was hurt. But that's it.
It's a tricky question. I don't think there's real answers here. Like, this is going to be probably a game that's... I don't know if there's going to be any takeaways from it, and that sucks from our perspective. As you mentioned, it's nice that this is happening when it is happening, because there are so few games, like, especially with the Atlanta one being rescheduled. Next game isn't until Sunday against Toronto, who is missing half their team as well. Seven players went into protocols for them, including Van Vliet, Siakam, Gary Trent Jr., Scotty.
Part of me just wonders if you start Anderson and Cornet.
I mean, unless, because the thing is
Pangos would make sense if Darius wasn't also super small, you know. Like, that's like that, you're really asking for it there. You know, so like I just think you can probably do that, and then your bench all of a sudden is exactly what it would be anyway. You know, it's Ricky, it's Jetty, is and Kevin. And they're probably not running more than eight men.
Here's the reality. There is no good answer. It's like trying to pick your favorite podcast host out of the two of us. There are only bad options.
I read the room wrong there.
But let's move on, because as I said, this is going to be tough to evaluate. I don't like the fact that you're playing Boston shorthanded.
I'm a little excited for it. Sometimes games that are like, obviously, like, it's just fun to see guys you don't know, you know, even if it's just one game. I actually am pretty sad. I mean, I know you're trying to get us to the mailbag, but I am a little sad for a guy like RJ Nemhard, who, like, you know, has played pretty well when he's gotten minutes and is doing great in the G League for the Cavs. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of excited to see him get a shot. I was sad to see him on that list.
I feel sad for almost everybody on there, not just because they caught COVID, but because you have Dylan Windler, who is finally getting an opportunity, and then he gets assassinated. And not only did he land on his head, he's got COVID. LaMarcus Stephens, COVID. Isaac Okoro finally having a really great five-game stretch, COVID. Like, there's not a good time for it to happen, but I feel bad because I thought there was real opportunities for these guys to kind of go out and make an impression and maybe, like, earn their way into the rotation when this team is more healthy and have a deeper rotation. So it's really unfortunate timing, but we do need to get to this mailbag, Carter. Let's get there. I intentionally picked this one first because I think it's fun. Corey asks, what's the most impressive win of the season so far? What is your opinion for the most impressive win, Carter?
Can you go first? Because I haven't thought about it yet.
So my answer, it took me some thought here, but I'm going to go with the win against the Mavericks. Not because I think the Mavericks are a great team or anything like that. In fact, beforehand, we were talking about how they are probably a little worse than their record. But to start a road trip against a team like Dallas, who had Luka playing really, really well, to survive that punch from Luka hitting all those threes, I thought it was a really, really impressive win. And for me, it was the turning point where I really started to buy into this team being a team that's in a good position to avoid the play-in if things don't go completely sideways. But I think this team, as healthy as they're going to get this season, is absolutely a team that can avoid the play-in. And the way that they handled Dallas with that kind of confidence and just really kind of taking away all hope, I thought it was the most impressive win of the year. But there's a lot of really good candidates here.
Yeah, my most impressive win of the season, it's got to be the game against Toronto, because, you know, I know that Toronto is not exactly a contender here, but, like, ultimately they're a team that presented a lot of specific problems for the Cavs. They are unbelievably good on the offensive boards, unbelievably good in transition, full of tall, lengthy wings who get into passing lanes, and all that stuff happened against the Cavs. The Cavs had no business winning that game, but just through sheer force of will and grit and a Darius explosion, they hung around and ended up stealing a win. And, like, I thought it was such an indicator for the season that we've ended up seeing from them, which is, this is a team that doesn't get blown out. They fight their way to competitiveness no matter who's been on the floor. And I think that's why it sticks out for me.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I mean, that was a game that I think you and I were both convinced they were going to lose, and the fact that they found a way to pull it out. Like, that's the impressive thing about this Cavs defense, is it keeps them in all these games. Like, even when they played in Milwaukee, the third game in four nights, tough travel schedule and whatnot, like, the offense wasn't going. Milwaukee was really selling out, taking Garland away, and their defense kept them in that game. So
you know what's funny, while I was looking at the schedule trying to find my favorite win of the season, a lot of my favorite wins of the season are losses. games where they were really, really competitive, even though they shouldn't have been. Or
the Utah really, one sticks out. Yeah, the Utah one sticks out. Oh, like, my
where
god,
they
is
really
that shot
challenged and made these teams work so hard. And those teams, you watched these elite teams and you're like, can you go away? Like, oh, so it's like that. I mean, that, I guess if anything tells you what a fun season it's been, it's that my brain went there.
The next question ties into this as well. Hunter asks what the favorite moment of the season is. And for me, it was versus Minnesota when Darius was just absolutely murdering them in the pick and roll. Just lob, lob, lob. Like, every time there's a stretch where the opposition has no chance to take that play away, to take that bread and butter away from them, that is the most fun to me, because it just shows, like, the command that Darius has over what the defense is trying to do. Like, he's manipulating them. He's creating opportunities for himself and others. Like, to me, that is by far the most fun that I've had this season.
Yeah, Mal in the chat just said the series of cavalanches lately have been one of the highlights for the Cavs this decade, and I couldn't agree more.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm gonna test the limits of our Cavs partnership by saying the Cavs gasm against the Kings when they just would add, like, literally everyone in the basketball world watched that sequence. And was like, holy crap.
That's
like,
a great
that
answer.
That was a war, you know, a 2016 Warriors-esque decimation.
Yeah. I agree with you. You know,
I don't think I've been higher as a fan since they won the title.
Yeah.
As I was in that moment. So yeah, that's gotta be the moment to me.
That made me feel like 2009, like, flying death machine when that team would just go on runs.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
That is so much fun. Mike asks, if Justin Anderson's shot continues like it has in the G League, for those that don't know, he's not a good shooter for his career, but in the first 11 games in the G League, he's shooting 36.4% on 7 attempts a night. Do we think there's a chance that the Cavs may end up keeping him and waiving Denzel Valentine?
Sure. There's always a chance, you know, like, there's a chance that these people kind of make something of themselves on out of nowhere. I mean, Justin Anderson, he was a guy who we all kind of thought was going to be
something,
a great 3-and-D wing coming out of, I believe. Yeah. He came out of Virginia. So he came out of the Tony Bennett system. We thought he was going to be a total lockdown guy coming out of school. And he kind of was just okay at defense and just an okay athlete. And the 3-pointer never came around. Shoots 29% for his career, has never shot better than 33% in a season, and now he is, 28?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's 28. I would be surprised if the 3-pointer is real. I'll just leave it there. But if it is, like, you probably have a fringe NBA player, and, you know, that's kind of what that position in the rotation is. So maybe there's a chance. I would be surprised, but you can never rule it out.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say no. I don't think that exact sequence would happen. I think if, for whatever reason, things click and he's performing well in practice and whatnot, maybe he might get the two-way spot over someone like Nembhard, right? Like, where they kind of change up that versus waving Denzel Valentine. I would not count on that. I don't know how much these guys are even going to play. I guess it's a fluid situation and anything can happen, but that specific order of operations, waving Denzel Valentine, I just don't really see that occurring, to be honest.
And like, also, I know he's worth noting.
He takes some wild shots, Denzel does, but he, for the most part, plays hard on defense.
He's been a very solid 10th, 11th man.
He's given you what you'd want from there. Like, you have to kind of manage your expectations when it comes to that spot in the rotation.
And I'll say this, if the Cavs did make like a 3-for-1 trade where they kind of cobbled together some salary, I think that's where, like, if anyone impresses them during this run where they're playing these kind of emergency players, that seems like the time when they would make an addition. Because the thing is, you don't really, unless someone's completely unguaranteed and you really like the person you're bringing in, like really like them, mm-hmm. the juice just isn't really worth the squeeze financially for like an 11th man. And Denzel doesn't have a small cap number. So I don't know. I just, it seems very unlikely to me.
Yeah. Adam Silver did come out today and say that there wasn't going to be a pause in the NBA season. There might end up being a pause in the G League season because
poor teams are getting ravaged.
And not just by the NBA poaching players. I'm sure there's cases there as well, because there seems to be all over the world. But I am enjoying some of the names that are coming back up. CJ Miles back in the league.
I was so happy. Is CJ going to be playing tomorrow?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I love CJ.
I will.
CJ's an all-time favorite.
First time that I'll be rooting for a player playing against the Cavs to hit, to bury us. I love CJ.
To bury us? My God.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's awful. Pyrotechnic asks, if Okoro keeps progressing on offense and remains aggressive, what do you think Sexton's role would be, and or would we end up trading him?
I would say that a trade has never been off the table, even independent of the injury, independent of Okoro. I think that when you're looking at your options with a restricted free agent, you have a couple, right? You can sign to a long-term deal, mm-hmm. which is obviously, I think, what Justin and I would prefer as it currently stands. You can let them walk, which is the dumbest thing you can do. Yep. You can wait for someone to make an offer and just match it. Or you can have them sign the qualifying offer. And then the last one is a sign and trade or something of that nature. Now, I would rather the Cavs just sign Colin and hope they can find a good deal to make it work. Because I believe Colin makes a real difference on this team if he's playing right now.
Mm-hmm.
But short of that, I think waiting out the market is always a challenge with matching. So I think that... If you give me the choice between let Colin walk and sign and trade him for something, I'm going to take the latter. Yeah. So, if they can't come to terms on a long-term deal, I think a sign and trade makes a lot of sense. But, we'll see how it plays out. I don't know. What do you think? I don't think Okoro has that much to do with it, I guess, is my answer.
Yeah, I think Okoro's play, where it might come into play is if he really continues to blossom and that unit is just working so well and there isn't roster turnover, because I think that's an important factor. Like if in this offseason the Cavs add a small forward and the dynamic changes with Lowry's not there, if there's continuity and you're mostly bringing back the same core and Okoro works really well in it and he blossoms, I can see a scenario where Sexton's brought back gradually, because think what Darius Garland looked like as a rookie coming off his meniscus surgery, right? Like there is an adjustment period and you may not want to mess with something that's working. But what I would expect is you're still getting a lot of minutes off the bench. I think this season has already shown players can get a ton of minutes off the bench and earn starters minutes on nights that they're playing really well. I would still expect him to be a major part of this team. I think you're correct in noting that a trade isn't really off the table for anybody. Like I think the only three that I would have tons of confidence in is Garland, Mobley, and Allen. But at the same time, I don't think a move is going to be done just to make a move or to save a dollar or two here and there. Like I can't recall in like the last decade, the Cavs losing a player that they wanted to keep because they couldn't pay him. Right. Like that's
not really their game.
That's one of the really fortunate things about being a Cavs fan, and one of the things that maybe sometimes I take for granted. But
a lot of small markets lose dudes.
A lot of small markets lose dudes, and that
Malcolm Brogdon would probably still be a buck in a different different ownership. So I think that they should prioritize getting him back and figuring it out later. That's really what I believe.
Yeah, especially when you're still talking about young talent, like. My philosophy is, unless it's a home run, keep this group together. They're hardworking. They get along well. They're willing to sacrifice for one another, and they seem to prioritize winning. And I think Sexton is 100% a guy that prioritizes winning. So I would be trying to bring him back. But of course, you never know what the future holds. You never know what opportunities become available. So I think anything is possible. But I don't think you're right that I don't feel like Okoro playing well changes the calculus on how you treat Colin Sexton or what role you're giving him.
Yeah, I don't really think so either. I know this isn't really a mailbag question, but I saw it in the chat and I want to answer it real quick. In the spirit of the episode, Stephen Bombay asked, how good has the Ricky Love Osmond combo been? I hadn't checked the numbers on this yet. Have you?
No.
All right, let's play the old guessing game. What's the net rating with that trio on the floor in their 187 minutes together?
Plus 13.
Plus 16.8.
I can see why JB is starting Lamar and trying to keep that unit together off the bench.
My word, that was better than I thought. What do you think it is with just Rubio and Osmond?
Oh, man. Probably like plus 14. I think
plus 12 and a half. Huh? Pretty dang good.
That's the thing. Like, you can do almost any combination with the Cavs, and this speaks to how well they've played this season.
187 minutes is no trifling number.
You get like double digits, like positive net ratings with so many combinations of players, and that is just endless amounts of fun. I do think that does tie into one of the questions that we received, which is, how do the Cavs go about long-term? Reese asked us this. Long-term, how do the Cavs replace what Love and Rubio are giving them? Because obviously they are older than the rest of the core. When this team, like when Mobley is 4 years down the road, you can't count on these guys to still be here and giving that kind of production. How do you go about replacing that, Carter?
So I think when we say long-term, we should mean really long-term. Okay. At least at the Rubio level, because I would love to sign him to a 2-3 year extension if I had my druthers.
Let's go 4 years. 4 years for Bell Carter.
Oh, that's all. Okay.
Where do you see yourself in 4 years?
So I think that it's a trick question, actually. The kids will replace their production because they won't be kids anymore 4 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're really looking for there is just good supporting play around them. You don't need to... Ricky and Kevin fulfill such an important role in this team because they're the grown-ups in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually the kids will be grown-ups in the room. And, you know, at that point, all you need to do is look for stylistic fits. Yep. You don't need to worry about know-how and reps and experience as much because these 21 and 22-year-olds will be 25, 26. And now, obviously, it's still good to have that presence on the team, but, like, their specific production, I think, is relative. Well, I mean, I don't know about how relatively replaceable it is because they are actually producing really, really well. But you're just looking for high-performing role players at that point.
Yeah, I think you're right to turn kind of the focus to how the young guys are playing because ultimately the answer to that question is going to depend on how they develop, right? Like if Mobley has changed and added to his game where he is more of a playmaker, where he's like a Marc Gasol, Jokic, maybe not Jokic, but like Marc Gasol level high post creator that's generating a lot of offense, and you have Darius out there generating a lot of offense. Maybe what you want from the backup guard position is a little bit more of a combo guard, someone that's going to provide some secondary playmaking, but that primary initiation is coming off of the kind of the main pieces. Maybe you've added a playmaking wing that changes the calculus there.
Maybe
right?
Isaac's handle develops significantly in the next 4 years, and he's that playmaking wing. There's just so many variables that, again, like I think like I'm not. That's why I'm not really worried about like their specific style. I'm worried about the. Because I think we all kind of agree that as good as they've been, their value is very, very much extends beyond their box score contributions.
Right, which is the biggest thing for them right now.
And that's the stuff I think will start to just even out as this team gets a little bit older.
No, I completely agree. And it's all fluid, right? Like you're ultimately trying to get 48 minutes of great basketball with various different combinations and stuff like that. And it depends on how these guys grow. It depends how Sexton develops. It depends how Okoro develops. Is Laurie still here? Like there's so many different factors that can go into that. But I do think it is an interesting question. J. Cole asks, do you see Okoro coming back and picking up where he left off? Or do you think there will be an adjustment period?
J. Cole is in the channel. Holy crap. We got some A-listers. I would imagine he's going to pick up where he left off because he did not have a physical, you know, an injury that he's coming off of. You know, you I think Fedor reported relatively mild symptoms for folks. Mm-hmm. If he didn't, apologies. But I think that as long as no one's really sick, fingers crossed that no one's really sick, and these are some of the more mild outcomes that tend to happen when you are vaccinated, then no, I don't expect a drop off. I hope he kind of just hits the floor running. Like, obviously his timing was really unfortunate, but if nothing else, it's just more time for that hammy to get all the way healthy.
Well, I guess we're doing some role reversal here, because I'm going to go on the other side and say there's probably going to be a little bit of an adjustment period. I think when you look at that 5-game stretch that Okoro had, it was phenomenal. I think it was really encouraging. You want to see kind of those high watermark performances. But I do think to some extent it's matchup dependent, right? Like, I think when you go up against a Milwaukee or some of the tougher teams, he's going to have a tougher time because there are still limitations to his offensive game. And it depends on like who he's playing against. Confidence after being off for a little while, getting the conditioning back. Like, I don't think it's going to be a massive adjustment period, because it's different than him coming back from the hamstring and trying to like learn to regain that trust and whatnot. And we still don't know if there's other factors, right? Like, even if you have mild symptoms, sometimes players talk about having brain fog and other issues that linger for a while. So I would say I don't have tons of confidence that he's going to come back. But I still do think the body of work that he had before that positive test factors in. I think that that's something he can build off of. We've seen Kevin Love and Lauri Markkanen come back after being off with COVID and having symptoms and having issues, come back and play well. So I wouldn't rule it out, but I don't have complete confidence that he's going to come back guns blazing.
You heard it here, folks. Justin doesn't believe in Isaac Okoro.
Quote me. Put it down in stone, Carter.
I don't know. I'm sorry. Keep us going.
All right. Next one. Friend of the podcast, Bron Jetty from Brazil. He actually asked us two questions.
Our guy. Our guy.
This guy. He thinks he's entitled to two questions, but I'm going to give them both anyways, because you know what? They're interesting questions. What are the best and worst playoff matchups for the Cavs this year? Let's look at the current East standings when we're doing this. What do you think the best and worst matchups are for the Cavs, Carter?
Worst matchup is Milwaukee.
Yeah,
I don't think it's close.
Yep.
Giannis has mastered the art of putting, people with length under the basket. He has mastered his physicality and his footwork, and is one of the few players Mobley doesn't have a length advantage on, really.
Yep.
And then they can throw Drew, who is the perfect Darius defender, at him and desync the offense. And then on top of that, on the offensive end, while I think the Cavs can do a pretty good job putting up a wall, they have nothing for Chris Middleton, really.
No.
Who is an elite mid-range shot maker. Because the Cavs are really good at taking away easy shots right now. But, like, that's Middleton's value, is he makes hard shots and can do it at volume. So I think they're the hardest by a country mile.
I'd feel so much better. Sorry to cut you off, but, like, I would feel a lot better in that matchup if they did have Sexton. Like, I think the absence of a second creator really, like, I think that's the one team that really kind of can expose that, especially in a playoff series. Like, teams start making adjustments when you get to the playoffs. They don't do that in the regular season. Even a Mike Budenholzer team is capable of making an adjustment or two. And I think they are best suited to take away the Cavs bread and butter. So I think that's where the experience and roster limitations would come in.
Before you pick your best and or before you pick your worst and best, I think we should set a ground rule. Best needs to be a bet among the top 6 seeds in the East, just to challenge ourselves a little. Because I think the Charlotte Hornets would be our best. Yeah, sure, but
yeah,
let's challenge ourselves.
I think there's interesting ones. Like, there's Boston, who's going to maybe feel good if they get that 2-1 series lead and get the tiebreaker after another asterisk win on Wednesday, if that's what ends up happening. They like to get confident and to be dragged back down to earth. All right, so obviously my worst.
Who's your worst? Is it Milwaukee?
Yeah, I already agreed with you. Thanks for listening, Carter. Okay. Good Lord.
I couldn't tell if you were just being a good co-host or if that was actually your pick.
No,
it's 100%. Gee whiz.
It's 100% Milwaukee. I am going to... man, this isn't that bold of a take. Chicago Bulls, I think, are the best matchup for the Cavs, because I think maybe this is a little bit of Cavs bias because I've seen playoff DeRozan so many times, but I think that the Cavs, if they can disrupt what Chicago does offensively, like I think Chicago's defense, even though it's been good this year, I think it's something that the Cavs would be able to score on. If you're talking about these top six teams being Milwaukee, Chicago, Brooklyn, Miami, and Philadelphia, like I think I like the matchup against Chicago. Philly, I guess it kind of depends on what happens with Ben Simmons and who they get in return for him. But I'm going to go Chicago, and maybe that's because they're the other riser along with the Cavs, that they just don't have the track record that I believe in just yet.
I went from being wholly unafraid to Chicago to just a little bit afraid. Their point of attack defenders are awesome. And awesome point of attack defenders scare me against this Cavs team because of the over-reliance on Darius as a creator.
Yeah.
Do I think the Cavs could win that series? Yes. Can I say a thing that the Heat beat, for our friends at the Heatbeat, would hate?
Oh, God.
Give me Miami, man.
Oh.
I think Kyle looks old.
He does.
I think Okoro is about as good of a defender as you're going to get on Jimmy because of his physicality. And the fact that they will have two enormous people to meet him at the rim, where he does literally 95% of his damage.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, either big, I feel very comfortable going up against Adebayo. Like, I don't think he's scoring in isolation against them, and I think their help defense around him will cut off his passing lanes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it would be an easy one. I think you're probably right that Chicago is among those teams the one you'd want to face the most.
If it wasn't for Spo, I might be more inclined to agree with you.
Yeah, I think from a personnel standpoint, the Cavs would have a legitimate shot to beat Miami. And I know that's blasphemous. And I know if any non-Cavs fan is listening, I just look at the matchups up and down. And I go, I think they could do it. Now, if Duncan Robinson snaps out of it and becomes an absolute deadeye again, we're probably dead in the water. Because of the way you have to overcommit to the paint with the other ones mm-hmm. on the team. But, like, you know, I would just rather play Miami than Milwaukee or Brooklyn for sure, right?
Man, imagine telling us that this is where we're at as this 2021 comes to a close, that this is the way that we're talking about the Cavs.
Reality is the answer is Philly, because they're a little broken right now.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
That is actually – that's the least sexy answer.
And they've like, also I don't even pooped like their pants. Like, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I don't like picking the sixth seed with a negative point differential as our choice, though. So if I have to be risky among that top five, I would pick Miami.
You got to risk it, Carter. Jerkoise asks, how far down could we fall at the end of the year and still be considered positive development? If we ended the season in the play-in, would we be satisfied? My answer to this is it depends on context. Like, how did you get to the play-in? Like, if COVID hits multiple times and you have losing streaks that get you to that 7-8 seed, like, that would be disappointing. But how disappointed I would be based off of how this team performed when healthy. I would still have disappointment that that's the way this season went, but I wouldn't have disappointment in the roster for that occurring, right? Because it's factors outside of their control, whether it be COVID or injuries. But yeah, I think my expectations have shifted to the point where I want to avoid the play-in, and I think that this team has a really good shot to win a first-round series. Now, you never know with the volatility that we're seeing with the NBA right now. A really good team might fall down in the standings and all of a sudden become the Cavs' first-round matchup. So I think everything needs to have context when you have yet another weird season. That being said, yeah, it would be a little disappointing if they didn't get out of the first round or if they didn't avoid the play-in.
I think getting out of the first round is so dependent on who match up with. Like I know that Boston's had a weird year, but like if Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown knock me out of the playoffs, I'm like, okay. Like, they're older, frauds. They're more experienced.
Frauds.
They have made conference finals.
They're frauds.
Perhaps
fraudulence.
So, but that's a team that can shoot you out of a playoff series.
To
really
clarify,
fast.
Them as a team are fraudulent. Those two are legitimate, but once again, yes. Shows that that is a team that is not better than the sum of their parts. Like,
no, they are not. God, they are not. But
parts.
Yeah, we've seen in, but we've seen in playoff series all the time where individual talent can just take you over the mountain there. So, you know, so I'm not at the point where I'd say, oh, they have to win a playoff series for me to be happy. But if they fall into the play-in, I think I'd be a little disappointed. But again, it's all context driven. Like, but if this is the, like, if the core of their team that we've seen get to 19 and 12 are healthy, then yeah, I think anything less than a sixth seed would be disappointing.
I think that's absolutely fair. Billy, he asked the question, Carter. Do we think Wade has earned permanent minutes in the rotation? And the only reason why I'm saying it that way with that tone is he is a beloved member of our Discord and a Dean Wade believer over the last couple of years. I think
I'm
he
not
should
sure
be in.
He isn't Dean Wade. Given, I think Dean Wade would be uncomfortable with how much Billy loves Dean Wade.
If he is Dean Wade, come on the podcast, absolutely.
Yeah, come on, brother.
Yeah, why would you be just stalling for so long? But yeah, you know what? I think he deserves permanent minutes. I'd probably feel a little different if Sexton was still here, because then I would feel like, okay, you can go 90 pretty well, and all these guys deserve real minutes. But Dean Wade has shown versatility playing at the three or the four that works within the context of this roster. And I think to alleviate some of the wear and tear on the body and deal with a long season, I would like to see Dean Wade get permanent minutes. I know it's a little tricky because this team is so heavy when it comes to bigs, but his ability to flex over at the three, I would like to see him at least get 10 minutes a night.
Yeah, I think I just don't see why he wouldn't be at this point. You know, just like that 10 minutes of backup three. I think he's been better than Lamar over the course of the season.
Yep.
And yeah, if the team's healthy, he should be in the rotation. I think this is actually not a conversation. JB, I understand why JB's been rolling with eight, but every time I see eight plus, you know, 7 minutes for the ninth guy, it just makes me antsy. I just worry about these guys burning out. So, yeah, I want a nine-man rotation.
The one thing I'll add to there, because that has been a discussion point, is it'll be an eight-man rotation, but the high players are usually at, like, 32, 34.
No, and
like,
it's not. I would love that to be the case. But
and everyone's in that, like, 26 to 34 window where even the reserves are playing a lot of minutes. I think if you look at the box score, that more often than not, that is the scenario. Card.
I do not agree that it is more often than not the case.
When they've been
Garland is playing 34 minutes a game. Mobley is playing 33.6, so basically 34.
Yeah, but he's also had stretches where Laurie and Love were out, right? Like
I get it. I'm just going to be antsy about it when I see that eight next to their name. Because the thing is, here's why I'm antsy, if I'm being really honest. A lot of time it's in games where the Cavs won by 20.
Yeah.
And it's like, if the team made a comeback, then they got to go play 40. Like, we Fair saw enough. That in the Sacramento game. Where
Look,
like,
this is why the podcast works. I'm the optimistic one. You're the antsy one. This is the yin and yang of how this works.
Yeah, and
works.
I'm the one who considers context, and you just read the box score. I understand.
Yeah, exactly. It tells me all I'll ever need to know. I don't even need to watch the games. Bron Jetty again. What one individual improvement would have the most impact on how far the Cavs can go this season? Would it be Garland reducing turnovers, offensive consistency from guys like Mobley or Okoro? What would your pick be if you could make one individual improvement to one player on this roster, Carter?
I think it is Okoro being a 36% three-point shooter. I think that is fundamentally, on at least four attempts a game, I think that is fundamentally affecting the team's ceiling. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the funny thing with Okoro, like, he does so many things well. Like, he makes the right pass. He's a good, he's good when he's attacking the basket and whatnot. And that three-point shot would really open things up. For the interest of the podcast, I'm going to go a little different and say Mobley's offensive consistency, because there was that stretch highlighted with that Knicks game where he was so aggressive and he was hitting these shots and he was creating like jump shots for himself, and he was creating opportunities for other guys. And if we could consistently get that kind of production from Mobley, that can kind of become the big playmaker at a higher volume that I think this team needs to be a little more dynamic offensively. You need someone that can kind of generate those opportunities, because I think that more than Okoro hitting the threes makes it harder for teams to really sell out and take Darius away. I think if Mobley is creating those jump shots for himself, that opens up all these opportunities. If he's creating off the dribble and whatnot, I just think the need of a big playmaker and someone that can provide that secondary initiation from the front court is really, really needed with this roster. So I'm going to go with Mobley's offensive consistency.
I consider that one as well. Mobley's jumper continuing to develop and his scoring to continue to rise. But yeah, both good answers, I would say.
TX on asks, is the biggest need for this team a true wing? If not, what is? I think this kind of ties into what I was saying before. I think it's a big playmaker. Like, I just think someone from the front court that can generate offense and take some pressure off of Darius and give JB the tools to make this offense even more dynamic. Like, I think when you look at what they did last season with limited offensive personnel, just adding the guys that they added this year has made the offense more dynamic. So I think adding a big playmaker in the front court is absolutely the biggest need. I think it is more common to find those type of players. Like, it's not super common to find them in general, but I think it's more common to find that at the small forward position than the four or the five. So I think a big playmaking wing is absolutely the biggest need for this team moving forward. Although I don't necessarily think it's something that is going to hold them back this season. Like, I think it might hold them back
at the highest stakes, but yes, I don't think it's going to be the difference between them having a successful season or not.
I think the growing pains are probably going to be more of a factor, like just dealing with the inexperience. I know it hasn't come up to a major degree to this point in the season, but I think that is going to be their undoing this year more so than needing a big playmaker, but I could be wrong.
No, I agree. And, like, you know, I'm even at the point where it's like, God, could you imagine a guy like Gordon Hayward, not a star by any means at this point in his career, but, you know, just a big, reliable connector that can run some pick and roll and change the kind of the dynamics of your offense while also being a very fundamentally sound defender, like that kind of player. And honestly, a guy like Hayward actually has a lot more appeal to me than even like a guy like Jeremy Grant, who is probably a much more valued player on most teams at this point in his career, especially given age and, you know, health concerns. I want a guy who can run a pick and roll at the three, and the Cavs don't really have one right now. And to that end, yeah, there's a reason the league is dominated by so many threes who can run high pick and roll. It's because when you have the height to see over the defense and the size to you know, score in all the ways that playing at that size can do, like, yeah, it's a huge, huge value add. And it's a thing it's one left, like, switch the Cavs can't flip. They can play most styles, but if you blitz the crap out of Darius with a really, really good point of attack defender, things get boggy.
Yep, totally agree. And we may have shown our hand, but the final question. Fear the Sword contributor Corey Walsh asks, if the Cavs end up being aggressive at the deadline, who would you want them to trade for? And we've touched on this a bunch of times. Like, my philosophy is either a big swing or a very, like, a bunt, like just a Torrey Craig type guy that kind of fills out the rotation.
Yeah, can we say aggressive means not bunting?
Sure.
If we want to define it as that, because I think we both would love a Torrey Craig, but I don't think that's the spirit of the question.
Yeah, okay. Well, if they are going to be aggressive at the deadline, guys that I'd be interested in are big playmaking wings, whether that is Jaylen Brown, if he hits the market, whether that's Brandon Ingram, whether that's someone else that I haven't thought of, like a playmaking wing that is under, let's say, 26 or 27, that is who I would have interest in, where you have some long-term control. Getting a playmaking wing is absolutely who I'd like to see them be aggressive.
Does Harrison Barnes qualify as a playmaking wing?
No.
I don't think so either.
No. But Barnes would, like, I get the fit If he was a free agent, I would understand wanting to sign him and whatnot if he had the flexibility to do so. But
does Dylan Brooks count as a big playmaking wing? I'm just not saying I don't think he is on the table anyway. Just curious what, like, who crosses the playmaking threshold for you?
Yeah, I don't know if Dylan Brooks, I guess that would count as being aggressive because he I think he's a pretty dynamic player. Obviously addresses the Canadian quota, which we really need to make sure that we're keeping an eye on at all times.
It's dangerous right now in Cavs town for the Canadiens.
Yeah, poor Pangos holding down the fort. But,
so alone.
You know, Brooks, I think he would factor in. I think Brooks would actually make a big difference on this team, but obviously not a guy that I could foresee being available. Memphis is doing pretty well, even though some of their courtside fans disagree and think that they're better without Ja Morant.
Well, I mean, I think the proof is in the pudding on that one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just to take that for data, man. Just look at the facts and figures. No, once again, looking at just wins and losses with young players and writing off young players that are fun and work hard, I wouldn't recommend doing so. Carter, no. Do you got any better answers?
No, you kind of ate all the airspace there, my friend. That's the thing. You know, we said this during the draft about why we like Cade, because it was like, you know, big playmaking wing. It's like the dumbest, easy, like to pretend it's insightful to say a team would be helped by a big playmaking wing is hardly like you, it's not rocket science. It's good to be tall and be able to run a pick and roll. So,
but also the difference is like that is a helpful building block for all teams. The Cavs are in a different situation where I think they've crossed off most other spots that you would want to build a complete roster. And that's just the one remaining hole and kind of the one gap that you'd like to see them fill at some point.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just the most expensive one to fill probably in the entire league. So, you know, we'll see if they can get, which is why I'm like not in a hurry to be aggressive if it doesn't mean someone of that caliber, because it's like, you know, eventually, I do think this team is going to need to, you know, use some of their firepower to go get one of these guys. Yep. And so don't burn it on, you know, fringe rotation players that, you know, or reliable rotation players who are your fifth man. Like, it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
Like keep your powder dry. This team's good enough on their own.
You have to be really, really careful on who you pull the trigger for, because you may only get one or two opportunities to do so. And you do it on the wrong guy, you add a Kristaps Porzingis, and that can really impact your team building. So I want to thank all of our listeners for submitting questions. We really do appreciate it. We will be off for the holidays returning. I think we'll be doing Monday and Wednesday next week. Hopefully the games that are currently scheduled do occur. Hopefully we get some guys back, that guys test positive and will be back in the rotation. It's very fortunate that this happened in a stretch where there's not a lot of games. So let's continue to knock on wood and hope that this Cavs outbreak doesn't spread worse than it has. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you like, subscribe, click the notification bell so you can tell when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.